This is the current federal tax developments for the week of November the 14th, 2016. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by your State Society of CPAs and Nichols Patrick CPE. This week, we're going to do something a little different because there was probably the most significant news story of the week that would affect taxes, is probably the most significant news story of the week that's going to affect most everything, and that was the U.S. elections. And what we're going to do this week is, since we now know who the president-elect is, we're going to take a little bit of time this week to look at the proposal of the president-elect, because presuming that the Republican Congress, because remember, Republicans now have control of both the House and Senate, is going to want to deliver something with a Republican president in place, it seems likely that the proposal that you will see currently on the president-elect's website will serve at least as a starting point, if not a majority part of, any new bill that we see coming through this year. Look at that, and we'll kind of discuss what's been going on. This week, I've got a few things happening. I'm right now in Minneapolis, Minnesota, because I'll be speaking at the Minnesota Tax Conference on Tuesday. Wednesday, I will be in Des Moines, Iowa. And then Friday, I will be doing fringe benefits in Cincinnati, Ohio. In Des Moines, I'll be doing an Iowa income tax update, or an Iowa tax update, more general. And then I'll also do Iowa ethics course. And coming up in December, for those of you in the Phoenix area, I know there are a few of you out there, on December 15th, I will in Phoenix do Arizona ethics and Arizona income taxes. And I'll also do on the 16th, current federal tax developments. This is essentially a repeat of the pair of courses that I did last week in Tucson. So we'll be talking it. The difference with this pair is, because it's from the Arizona Society offices, these will also be webcast. So those of you that like to watch them on the web, you'll be able to watch the webcast course. Of course, the 15th course, that's two separate courses, each one of which is a four-hour course. The 16th course is a single eight-hour course. So those of you in Phoenix, that comes toward the end of my big CPE season. So if you're around and you're available in Phoenix, consider coming by to take a look at those particular courses or sign up for them on the web. Now, as I said, we had our big story of the week, and our big story is very simple. It's probably the one you've been seeing on every TV station. You've been watching on the news. You've seen on the web. It's probably been in your Twitter feed, on Facebook. You might have noticed there was an election this past week. And that means that we actually got to discover who the president-elect is going to be. Now, I got to spend an interesting election night because I was lecturing in Boise, staying at the Riverside Hotel, and discovered while I was there that apparently that is the Republican Party hotel in the Boise area. And so apparently virtually every Republican running for office in the Boise area had some sort of room and party running. So we had all kinds of political types around there that evening. And I did notice that I probably could have gotten free food all night by just walking down the hall. Didn't feel like that was quite right since I couldn't vote for any of these people. Seemed a little bad to say I'm a supporter. But I was actually invited in by one for an Oreo cheesecake. So, you know, even after I said I'm from Arizona, well, that's okay. You know, just come in. So anyway, interesting evening. And of course, that evening we discovered, or maybe, you know, for some of you early the next morning, we discovered that the winner of the election was Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump has had on his website a tax plan for a while. You'll find it on his website as www.donaldjtrump.com. That plan has changed over time. And in fact, it appears that it was being modified just as I was pulling it down to write this particular write-up, because the one I got cached on Google had some subtle changes from the one I was able to see yesterday when I took a look back at the site to come up with it. So it appears that it's still kind of a work in progress, but we're going to discuss what's at least there right now. Now, there's a couple of warnings I want to give you when we take a look at a proposed tax plan, any proposed tax plan. As always, this may never pass at all. That's always a possibility because this has to get through both houses of Congress. And it also has to then, whatever comes out, has to be something that Donald Trump will still sign. And we know that Congress likes to change things. Now, as we said, the plan could also be modified significantly. There is a House GOP plan that was also floating around at the same time. It has many, but not all of the provisions in here. Some of them, I think, may be may not fit with the House GOP plan as well as, you know, you might hope. So we'll have to see how that works. But it seems likely that we will get something that is a combo of the Donald Trump plan and the House GOP plan next year, presuming that in order to show you have a functioning government, you know, then, and that basically to justify, and at least in theory, the voters taking confidence and giving control of the presidency and both houses to the Republicans, there may be some pressure on them to actually deliver a tax plan next year. And let's not forget, generally, presidents have gotten one tax bill. So we're going to presume that we may very well see a tax bill come out of this. Normally, they get at least the first one. It becomes much more difficult to get the second, third, etc. So we'll see. But we are restarting a new administration. So it seemed to me like the chances are reasonable that we're going to get something relatively close to this. And your clients are probably going to want you to know what's in this anyway. So let's take a look, kind of try to figure out what's there. One problem we do have, the plan itself on the website is not legislative language. The plan itself is obviously written for the political campaign. It was written to be, you know, kind of quickly digested. It's talking points. So we're going to have to make some assumptions about how these things be implemented in the law. But we probably can at least get some idea. And there are some specifics that we can certainly tie down some specific items. And others, we're just going to have to kind of figure out what they mean. But let's start with the first part of the plan. We're going to go top down. If you go to Donald Trump's website, you're going to find that, and you go to his tax proposal, just Google that. Donald Trump and tax, you know, his tax proposal, you'll find a document that explains this. Now, the first thing which he proposes to do is to reduce individual tax rates. He's going to cut us down to three brackets, would be the proposal, and the top bracket would drop from 39.6% to 33%. For married filing joint taxpayers with taxable incomes less than $75,000, they would pay 12% on their taxable income. For those that are above 75, but you know, no more than $225,000, they're going to pay 25% on that part of their income. And when your income goes above $225,000, your marginal rate will go to 33%. The single tax brackets will be exactly half of the married filing joint. So we will go and complete the, you know, trying to squeeze the marriage penalty out of the brackets. We have had that in the lower brackets for a while. We've definitely had problems at the very upper brackets for the marriage penalty. This would effectively eliminate that part of the marriage penalty. Note, I did not say we'll eliminate the marriage penalty. The marriage penalty is more than just this. There will be all kinds of things. It tends to get in the tax law in all kinds of ways. So there'll be other places that will show up. For instance, we talked about earlier this year the case of Voss and Sophie, the case of the two unmarried individuals who owned a house together and who we have determined can each take $1 million of mortgage debt. But if they got married, they could only take $1 million. So living in sin is tax effective. That would still be true, apparently, under this plan. So we're going to see how that one works out, but certainly it'll be a reduction in tax bracket. We have some other things that would take on this. You know, we have some other individual changes that would be there. The capital gains tax rates, the site now says, didn't say when I first looked at this in the cash version that Google had, but, you know, because I looked at the cash version because right after the election on Wednesday, couldn't get to the site. So it was a little bit of fun. Yeah, I was kind of being overwhelmed. So I had to go to a cash version on Google. The cash version didn't have this line. The current version does, that capital gains rates will not be changed by Mr. Trump's proposal. However, there is a slightly confusing item there that it says, you know, we'll retain the current maximum rates and tax brackets will be quote unquote as shown above, which were the rates I just gave you for ordinary income. Not sure what that means, how that integrates, if 20% will simply be a max rate. So until you get above the 12% bracket, you're going to have 12%, which may make sense. It's not clear if there will be a 15% capital gain bracket or not. The one change that he would make that is not one that we've generally seen the Republican Ways and Means Committee come up with very often is that there would be that he would require carried interest to be taxed as ordinary income. That's a very significant change. It's been pushed by a number of Democrats. That is in Mr. Trump's proposal that anybody who receives a carried interest would no longer be able to receive the treatment as long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. For those who aren't aware of what a carried interest is, it's used quite a bit in certain investment structures for the person managing it. What they get is not a management fee, but they get a percentage of the partnership called a carried interest. Therefore, since all the partnership invests in is investment assets, what they end up receiving is normally mainly capital gains and dividends, which obviously are taxed at a much lower rate than ordinary income. The also new on the site that wasn't the cash version, there's a statement there that Mr. Trump would repeal the net investment income tax, the 3.8% tax, as well as the individual alternative minimum tax. So those are also part of his proposal. Significant issues. We have some issues on deductions. A couple of things that the Trump proposal would do with deductions. First, the standard deduction would be increased. For a single taxpayer, there would be a $15,000 standard deduction. For married couples filing a joint return, there'd be a $30,000 standard deduction. Now, there's no mention if we're going to get an additional standard deduction for those that are over 65 or blind. I suspect we're going to still get that because but then again, you know, we don't know for sure till we see the written bill. There would also introduce another thing that's a little interesting. There would be a cap on total itemized deductions imposed on all taxpayers. Presumably, this would be in lieu of the Pease limitation. So itemized deductions would be capped on a joint return at $200,000 and at $100,000 for a single taxpayer. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking that provision seems likely to face some opposition from charitable organizations who obviously are going to be concerned that this would discourage some rather large donations because you're only going to get 200 grand or 100 grand. The theory will be, why should I make more than that in donation? Why shouldn't I hold it and maybe make extra donations later? And I'm sure the charities would prefer not to have people thinking that way. So because of that, don't be surprised if the charities don't try to get that particular provision struck from this bill. Donald Trump would also go back, and yet again, we're going to repeal the estate tax. Remember, we did this once in 2001. I mentioned that, our AGTRA repeal, largely because there is a problem. What we're going to see in the upcoming congressional session is that the Republicans held onto the Senate, which is true, but they only have a 51 or 52 to 48 or 49 advantage. There's still one contest to be decided. That's not enough to force a vote in the Senate through anything but the reconciliation process. Some of you may remember back in 2001 when George W. Bush was trying to get his tax program, the AGTRA program, through. We ran into that roadblock as well. There were not enough votes coming over with the proposal to get over the 60-vote hurdle to allow them to suspend the rules and get rid of the rule in the reconciliation provision that you can't spend money more than 10 years out. Well, because of that, we may again see a problem where we're going to repeal the estate tax, but only for 10 years. So if we go back to that mode again, that's maybe good news, but it may also be quite a bit of uncertainty. There was one problem with what happened in 2001. It caused all kinds of confusion for 10 years. If we do it again, I would like it to be done. If you're going to do it permanently. Unfortunately, what may happen is they'll say all we can get is for 10 years, and then you're back trying to figure out what does any of this mean and should we do anything. So remember, you still have that problem of the Senate. The Republican control there is only 52. That's well short of what they need to be able to just assure they can pass their bills through anything but using a reconciliation measure. And a reconciliation measure has already been rumored to be used for the repeal of Obamacare. So that reconciliation bill may be tied down with a lot of interesting and odd proposals. By the way, when you try to use that, there's all kinds of crazy restrictions you run into. So it could make a lot of this interesting. Mr. Trump also has some proposals to revise how we deal with childcare. It doesn't say so, but I would presume that we are going to repeal the childcare credit. We're rather going to go to an above-the-line deduction for childcare that is capped at the average cost of childcare for the state in question. It's available again for children under the age of 13, so basically the same requirements we have now. It's not available at all, though, if your income is over $500,000 if a married couple, or $250,000 if you are a single individual. So there would be a loss of it entirely. The other thing this would work with is you'd be giving a similar deduction for elder care. That would be capped at $5,000 per year, but again, above the line. There would be spending rebates that would be given through the earned income credit to low-income taxpayers, because obviously an above-the-line deduction, or even frankly, the old credit, wasn't of much use if you don't really have any income. So those earning up to $62,400 joint or $31,200 single, via some mechanism up to $1,000 might be, or I should say, a spending assist will be there. I was getting ahead of myself on a $1,000 routine. We have another child care proposal, though. It's a little different. And that's taking on a concept very similar to the what we talked about, health savings accounts, 529 plans. We're now going to have, the idea is we're going to establish these things called dependent care savings accounts. A dependent care savings account, up to $2,000 per year can be put into that account. And after age 18, any unused balance in that account can be used tax-free for the child's education. There would be no tax on the earnings in this account and no tax if it was used to pay for childcare. For certain low-income households, there would be a match, so up to half of it could come from the federal government. That's what would come through the earned income tax credit, and it would be dumped straight into that account. So if they put up $1,000, the government put up $1,000, and they would have this savings account put together to pay for childcare for the child. Okay, more interesting asides. Now, the final thing we have in this proposal are some business tax proposals. So let's talk about those, because they may be some of the more interesting ones of the group. Now, unfortunately, all through the paper, they refer to the business tax rate. It's not clear, but it would certainly appear from the rates they mention that we are talking about the C corp rates of 35%. These 35% is definitely the business rate they mention, and the only 35 we have is the C corp rate. Well, apparently we would drop the C corp rate at least from 35% to 15%. In the way the proposal states it, for businesses that are willing to retain the money in the company. So the idea would be that we would drop the rates to 15%. It would apparently apply to all corporations. So it appears that we might get rid of the qualified personal service corporation tax that was tied to the highest corporate rate. Well, I guess if 15 is highest, maybe we can leave it in because it doesn't matter. We would also remove entirely the corporate alternative minimum tax that already does not apply to small corporations, but it would not apply to any corporations under this rule. Manufacturing firms could elect to expense equipment purchases in lieu of getting interest deductions. So the idea was, and there'll be a period when they can elect to do so, they could elect to take a current expense for all the equipment they buy. But if they did that, they could deduct no interest on debt. So your choice is deduct everything now and lose the interest, or, you know, deduct the interest but not be able to take the accelerated write-off. Again, not clear if that replaces 179, if that's in addition to 179, and also how that integrates with bonus depreciation. None of those are actually covered in here. We just know we have this manufacturing firm write-off. We also clearly would have to come up with a definition of what's a manufacturing firm. It might be that we're going to talk about just borrowing the Section 199 definition for the production deduction. That was always a bad term, but hey, it's what Congress came up with. So we might borrow that definition, but then again, we might get a totally different one. We're not sure. Now, if you think about all this for a second, one thing that should come to your mind, those of us who've been in practice since before 1986, is with a 15% rate, even with double taxation, if we retain the 20% capital gain rate, if you can have any sort of delay in paying the second tax, a C corp may suddenly look like a much better option to use for your business than using the S corp. especially if you need to build money inside the company for investment purposes. So we need to build inside to build capital. We may be pressured to make our balance sheet look better. And the C Corp has always made that easier. This could make it very easy to get that done with a maximum 15% rate on everything. We'll have to see, of course, you know, whether he talks about getting rid of the cumulative earnings tax and other issues, you know, how we work on those things. But you may keep this up with a flat 15% rate. Suddenly, C Corps may not look so bad because, again, the 15% rate would apparently also apply if we sold the assets of the corporation. So even at a sale, you'd be looking at a maximum 2% kicker rate. If we're looking at 15 plus 30 on the gain, and actually, you know, so we'd have to figure out, you know, how bad, you know, how is it really a problem? And will C Corps be in play? But very much with rates like this, we may see C Corps in play. That'll be especially true if you're in a state, as many are, where the highest corporate rate is significantly lower than the highest individual rate. So then once the state's in that mix, maybe the rates are even, you know, better than individual rates, even if you pay out all the earnings currently. Now, this is going to be paid for much the same way we thought any corporate form would be paid for. There will be a tax, a reduced tax on repatriated funds to encourage people like Apple Inc. to bring their billions back into the U.S. There would be a 10% tax on those funds. That the theory of that is it would bring the funds back in. They could be invested in the U.S. and the Treasury would get a windfall in the first year because those funds would be repatriated. Finally, he proposes, because again, childcare comes back yet again, there are proposals to provide various incentives for employers to provide childcare for the employees of for their employees. So they're going to provide on-site childcare, similar things. We're going to beef up some significant benefits that may occur to corporations that do that. Now, as I said, please take care. This is not the law right now. But it is something to consider has a reasonable chance of passing in some form recognizably close to this next year. So you may want to consider at least the possibility of these things becoming law when you're doing your 16 tax planning and discuss that with your clients. So it may very well be that tax rates might go down next year for individuals. That would impact your ideas about whether you want to defer income or not at this point. Maybe that we may have a much better C Corp future. And by the way, if we do, then suddenly 1202 stock, if you have a corporation that can qualify for 1202 status, looks a lot better. So that could also be a reason to do your C Corp. So you want to consider all of these and keep your eye on what Congress does early next year and what the leadership and the president-elect are saying from here on out about any tax bill, how quickly it would move next year, and what exactly would be in it. But certainly, I would suggest you want to go to Donald Trump's website and take a look at, you know, it's not a very long outline. You can read it very quickly and have an idea so you can discuss with your clients what exactly is there. Prior to the election, I didn't feel like it's worth spending lots of time looking at either of the proposals because till we know who won and what the Congress looked like, you know, there wasn't really much point in knowing the proposal. Obviously, any time you spent on Hillary Clinton's proposal, probably at this point would have been wasted. And we didn't know that we wouldn't get a Congress that was at odds with the president anyway. So tough to know how things would go. But now that we know what's there, probably a good time to take a look. Well, we're here now in the month of November. It's actually Thanksgiving time coming up here. So as you get ready for your Thanksgiving approaching here in about a little over a week, be sure to consider getting your CPE for November from your state societies. Again, we're in prime season at this point. All the societies are offering a number of courses at this point in time, both live and webinar. And we're doing a bunch on the road here at Nichols Patrick. So if you want to come out and see us, any of our locations, you can check that at npcp.net. And I told you earlier where I'm going to be. As I said, this week I'm here in Minnesota. Then I go ahead and I'll be in Des Moines and following that off to Cincinnati on Friday. And then the week after that, I have one day on Wednesday in Phoenix. We're going to talk about the CNS Corp corporate taxation. Then I do a series of courses in Oklahoma City that we discussed last week, along with the Oklahoma Tax Institute and New Mexico's Tax Conference. And then later, then as I said, in mid-December, I finish up with those Arizona courses. So again, be sure to take a look at, consider your state CPE societies, consider what's being offered by your state societies. This has been the current federal tax developments, or I should say maybe development, for the week of November 14th, 2016. Next week, we should go back to getting more current updates at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. There won't be an election in the way. Well, also, you want to check your state society's website for courses, as we've said. You can follow me on Twitter at Ed Zollers, or you can send any questions or comments to edzollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. Be sure to join us here next week as we'll talk about things that develop in the area of federal taxes.